You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. This is Richard Deitch, and welcome to the Sports Media Podcast. My producer is Patrick Antonetti. One guest this week, where we'll do it sort of an abridged sports media podcast, but I am very pleased to be joined by Kavitha Davidson, sports and culture writer for The Athletic, host of the Culture Calculus podcast. She is a regular on this podcast, and we will mostly do Olympics-based media talk as well as some Simone Biles talk. Kavitha, how are you?
Doing well. Thank you for having me, Richard.
All right, so here's what I want to start with, Kavitha. And this is not, you don't necessarily have to look at it under a media prism, but this is always interesting to me. How much Olympics are you watching, and what are you watching?
A lot, I will say. I think this happens every 2 years, frankly, not even every 4 years. I end up getting consumed by the Olympics in real time, and then I end up rewatching what I've already seen in prime time. So it's been an interesting, let's say, like 6 days.
All right, so again, anybody who sort of either writes about this or is sort of an Olympics geek understands that one of the annual traditions every couple years, in addition to the torch lighting, is just torching NBC for something. So in this case, there's certainly been the traditional complaints about, you know, live versus, you know, your ability to watch something live, not necessarily on big NBC, but you have to watch Peacock. Obviously, people complaining about if you want to watch the men's basketball tournament live, you got to get Peacock Premium unless you have a cable service. There are people who I think are still a little confused about authenticating their own cable to get all the NBCOlympics.com stuff that they can get. You know, the reality is you can pretty much watch anything live if you have a cable subscription, but I'm not sure if the messaging is so great that everybody knows that. In your own experience, Kavitha, have you been able to watch what you've wanted to watch, or have you had to struggle for some things?
So the answer is both. I have definitely struggled to find the things that I wanted to watch because I was trying to use Peacock. I am one of the very few millennials who has a cable subscription. So I was able to authenticate and to sign in on the NBC Olympics app in order to find the things that I wanted to watch. I could not for the life of me, and I felt super old doing this, but I could not for the life of me figure out how to navigate Peacock properly. I don't think I'm alone in that.
No, wrestling, but I know a lot of wrestling fans who drives them crazy. They're not super in love with the streaming service.
It's Peacock has not been great to me, I'll put it that way. But once I figured out the NBC Olympics app, then I really got to like take ownership over what I wanted to see and what I didn't. And that's when I was watching surfing, for example.
Yeah, so. Which I loved. Actually, I think the NBC app is good. I usually just because it's quite frankly just better It's easier to navigate. I watch a lot of my stuff through the CBC app live, which is really easy to navigate and very user friendly. But you know, when I've been on NBC, I find that website and Olympics app pretty good to navigate. All right, so that's the Kavitha Davidson experience when it comes to the Olympics. Now let's talk about a little bit writ large. Per Sports Media Watch, who I appreciate chronicling this every day along with a number of others, as of, sort of take it as we're taping this on a Friday, so roughly we'll take it through Wednesday night and Thursday. Primetime Olympic viewership was down 48% on NBC, including cable and streaming, Wednesday night. Second smallest primetime audience ever for the Summer Olympics. They're averaging around 15, 16, 17 million, sort of depending on what they're hitting. This is essentially down, Kavitha, like 40, 45, 48% versus Rio, depending on sort of, you know, how you ultimately want to play it. The larger story here is that Olympic viewership from previous Olympics is way down. Now, there's a time difference here, so some of that is partly time difference, but I think there's more to this story because NBC's sort of premise here, or their thesis, was that the Olympics were going to be this communal experience that everybody,
the galvanizing event,
right? Galvanizing event. It was going to help us in a post-COVID universe. People were going to gather around and really celebrate and come together as a polarized nation. Like, that has just not come close to happening. So I wonder if you have, I mean, I have some thoughts as to the why, but I wonder if you have some thoughts as to the why viewership, particularly primetime viewership, is so, so down compared to other Olympics.
I mean, I think first and foremost, it's summer after a year of not having outdoors, right? And, you know, masking and vaccination notwithstanding, people are outside and doing things. I think that sports and watching the Olympics are not one of those things that people are doing after a year of not being able to do a lot. So I think that that's very basic. That's a very basic part of it. The other thing is, frankly, I mean, haven't we been seeing this trend, not so drastically, but haven't we been seeing this trend for just years now? And we're seeing that with the Super Bowl. We're seeing that with the World Cup. Viewership is fine, but it's definitely on a downward trend. And I think that that's just a function of the fact that people aren't watching the same things that they used to, and they're definitely not watching them at the same time.
Yeah, I think your first part, you may be onto something with the first part in terms of people, you know, sort of people just making the decision to opt not to watch television and to do other things. I do think the time difference is playing.
It makes a huge difference. We saw this with Pyeongchang
right.
as well,
yeah.
right?
Now, Beijing was obviously through the roof, but you can't compare mm-hmm. it to Beijing. 2008 may as well be 1776 when it comes to the
exactly.
television universe.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a different universe. I will say, actually, thank you, Sports Media Watch. The Olympics are averaging 17.2 million in prime time as of Thursday night. That's a full 11 million viewers short of the NBC-only average in 2016, so a big drop. So I think the other thing, too, I mean, I think there are a number of factors. I think you can't really make great evaluations when it comes to COVID, Kavitha, because these are individual in everybody's homes, and you have no idea how people are going to want to deal with, you know, 16 months of this, whether like being around a television is something that they want, or they're making other choices, or perhaps they're, you know, they're actually dealing with the disease. So, you know, television or sort of entertainment becomes a secondary function.
A secondary, yeah.
The other thing too is, and I think this is real, like it is very hard to watch these games, and I'm an Olympics geek, with no crowd. It doesn't feel atmospherically, not interesting is not the right, it doesn't feel like an Olympics to me. It doesn't feel like the atmosphere of the Olympics where you have the world sort of gathering in this place and people of all different nations like so super excited about what they're seeing in front of them. It just feels sterile and antiseptic. And I can tell you as a television viewer, I'm still going to watch it. Obviously, one, it's my job. Two, I'm a geek. But I think if you're a casual sports fan, I think it turns you off. That's a guess.
Well, Well, that's interesting. Do you also think that maybe it's because outside of gymnastics in this first week, and probably Katie Ledecky, the United States has not had people that that are headliners or household names?
Yes.
And like, I mean, we're talking about swimming right now, right? Outside of Katie Ledecky, can you name a male swimmer who is transcendent?
Well, I mean, I can name a ton of male swimmers, but,
right?
You know, both of us work for a sports site that covers the Olympics. We better know this, but yes, nobody. Caleb Dressel is not a household name, you know, in the middle of the country. And I do think that, and I'm probably guilty of this as well. I think
if people are watching for Lily King, which I mean, phenomenal, but
right.
I don't think that that's 15 million people.
What I was going to say is, I don't think we probably have any idea how much value Michael Phelps had to NBC and the millions and millions of people who just happened, if they happen to know one Olympic athlete, like they knew Michael Phelps and that they knew he had a chance for 7-8 medals. And, you know, you told your cousin that, hey, I'm going to be, you want to check out the Olympics tonight because Michael Phelps is going for medal
right.
X. I think Usain Bolt had a little bit of that. It's a little different. He's not an American athlete, competes in less events than Phelps. But I think one of the things I've come to think for these Olympics is I think Michael Phelps was probably a bigger star than I realized, because I do think that was part of the reason that swimming became a destination place for just average sports fans, not swimming fans.
Yeah, I think that before Michael Phelps, the Summer Olympics was always a track and field event, right? Like it was track and field and gymnastics that really drew in the average Olympics viewer. And that's not where we are right now. And then I know that we're going to get into this whole discussion, but that's also why it's been so detrimental for ratings and for the narrative to not have Simone Biles there.
So here's I was totally wrong about this. And I'm glad you sort of nice. See, you're a former, you're not a former, you're a podcast host.
I can do the segue.
Yeah,
right?
So you know segues better than me. Yeah, I mean, you've actually hosted a legitimate podcast compared to myself for a couple of them.
Well, thank you for legitimizing that. But.
So, my premise would have been when Simone Biles pulled out of the team competition, my premise would have been, yes, you heard about it. Yes, you know about it. But man, you want to see it. Like, you want to see how this thing unfolded, and you're going to get to NBC to check out sort of what happened, how the broadcasters talked about it, you know, what was going on there. I was wrong. Like, it did not bring a whole mass of people to the primetime coverage. And the news itself, once it was out, seemed to sort of be, I guess, what Americans would be interested in versus sort of watching how it unfolded. So I was wrong. Would you have guessed what I guessed, or would you have been like the opposite? Like, hey, it happened 13 hours ago. It's old. Nobody needs to see NBC's packaged narrative kind of story of how this came to be.
I think both. And NBC also does a very, I don't know if good is the right term for that, but NBC does a very good job of keeping those clips away from social media, right? So if you are seeing the breaking news of Simone Biles pulling out of the team competition, you're probably not seeing the first vault that led her to do that, right? Unless you're reading about it, or unless you're you and I. I wish that were the case, though, because I think that it would just serve Olympic viewership, and it would serve drumming up more interest in watching these games if that were possible. That being said, I think everybody read and had a lot of opinions about Simone Biles without actually seeing what happened to lead to that, and that did her and frankly the narrative a complete disservice.
All right, well, once again, another brilliant segue by you. Thank you for doing that. So I want to get your impression of how you view the coverage of Simone Biles over the last couple of days. Let me first say, I thought by and large NBC did a good job in terms of that, especially that first night. And I thought Michael Phelps was incredibly important to bring on.
Michael Phelps, I mean,
might have been the highlight of the gymnastics coverage, interestingly enough.
Yeah, Michael Phelps has been kind of a revelation, and I'm not usually one of the I don't always think that athletes are the best commentators. Michael Phelps has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
So
and he, and,
credit
and
where credit's due.
Unique insight into pressure, the pressure of the Olympics. I think Michael Phelps was pretty honest about suicidal thoughts. I don't know if that was during his Olympic run or post Olympics, but you know, he's been very, very honest about sort of the pressure of the rings and the pressure of gold and how that impacts people and how athletes need to, and how people one need to have a better understanding of the pressure on athletes, particularly Olympic athletes, and two, perhaps just better mental health kind of, mental health training as part of the physical training. So inevitably there were going to be assholes who had the take that Simone Biles, you know, quit. Simone Biles isn't a real American. You know, this is the pussification.
She let her team down.
Yeah, pussification of America. Right. I mean, whatever. There's a lot of
the pussification, the feminization of America.
Right. There's a lot
let's
of right wing
extremists.
Call it
what they're calling
right. I shouldn't even say extremists. A lot of right wing trolls who make their bones on that bullshit. And trust me, I wish I had better. I wish I was better about avoiding them and not liking and cheering when people dunk on them. That said, Kavitha, I have to admit, I've been surprised and kind of inspired by so many really well thought out pieces that I've read since this happened, from people explaining to me about the twisties and gymnastics to other well-known famous gymnasts coming on and explaining sort of what's happened, to I think the overwhelming majority of people who have supported Simone Biles. If nothing else, you could always be wrong here. I do think that this moment is going to cause, at least in people who are willing to sort of be open-minded here and thoughtful, a little bit of a pause on the kind of pressure we put on Olympic athletes, particularly young women who were in gymnastics. I don't know. I read a lot of things and I saw a lot of things, and rather than hyper-focus on the assholes, I was kind of like, you know, this is a good moment. Like, I feel like there's a lot of smart people who've gotten their voice out there. How did you see it?
I mean, I do see it that way. And I don't know if this is because, like, my Twitter is extremely highly curated. I don't mostly have the assholes in my mentions. I've been doing a lot of media recently. I was asked from the BBC how this is being taken in the United States. And I think one of the things that I have noticed is, yes, like always, like the loudest people are the most obnoxious people. But I do think that there is, from what I've seen, overwhelming support. And even if it's not just outright support, I've seen way more understanding and way more capacity to learn and to understand about what's going on here. Like, we've talked about the yips for 20 years,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Chuck Knaum, a Yankees fan, Chuck Knoblock not being able to
Steve
throw
Sachs
to first.
Before him.
There you go. Yeah. The twisties is a term that if you're not a huge Olympics fan, I don't think you've heard until this week, right? And the idea of how dangerous that is, how dangerous the sport of gymnastics is. And I have said that gymnastics is a sport that is so dangerous that we don't acknowledge is as dangerous as it is because it's mostly women in the United States that we know who are performing the sport. But at the same time, the fact that we have explainers, the fact that we have, you know, the feeling of getting lost in the air, quote unquote, which is what the twisties feels like, from gymnasts who are writing about this, is, I think, a little bit revolutionary. That also is a continuation of a conversation that we've had for at least a year. I actually bring it back to when Paul George and Kyrie Irving were talking about what it was like to be in the NBA bubble last year, and then obviously Naomi Osaka withdrawing from the French. These are not conversations we've had before. So in that sense, it is new. It is absolutely new. And just like putting words to that phenomenon, putting words to any kind of mental health issue is important.
Yeah, listen, you got to just realize that there's always going to be a way to monetize. Like, I, by the way, this is not a cancel culture conversation. Have all these shit opinions you want. I'm not saying stop it or anything like that. I loathe Skip Bayless. I've never once written that Fox Sports should fire or cancel the guy. But people should just know that there's always someone enabling this. Like, there's always someone behind the asshole with the voice. You need a distribution engine to to send that out there. So, you know, if Piers Morgan is going to do his bullshit, well, he could do it on his Twitter feed. That's one thing. But the Daily Mail is a massive enterprise. And when they put that column out there, you know, that's who you should really be mad at. You should be mad at the Rupert Murdochs of the world. He doesn't own the Mail anymore, but the Rupert Murdochs of the world for putting shit out on Fox. Not necessarily. I mean, you can be mad at the person doing the opinion too, but what I guess I'm trying to say is there's usually money behind
the institution that upholds that.
Yeah, there's
right?
money behind it to monetize. One other thing I liked about NBC here, and again, it's early, so they could still F this up, quite frankly, but they didn't necessarily do a Suni Lee versus Simone Biles. You know what I'm saying? Like they didn't necessarily frame it around Suni Lee came in an emergency situation to save the day from the forlorn Simone Biles. You know what I mean? Like they focused on
here's, or even before Suni won that gold, Jordan Chiles was, I mean, absolutely a hero of the U.S. being able to take silver in the team competition.
Right. I just like that the host broadcaster in this case has seemingly focused on her and her individual brilliance as opposed to her within the larger narrative of Biles isn't there. Now, again, it's early, and me and you are taping this before the individual apparatus competition, so the story is not over. We don't know what Simone Biles is going to do there. We don't know who's going to compete for the U.S. team and elsewhere, but I'm going to be curious to just read and pay attention to what the stories are that come from this, because I think this could, in a very, very hard and tough moment for one of the most famous athletes on earth, something good may come of this beyond her, and it does feel like at least a little bit more of an understanding of this stuff. And if it helps one future athlete or if it helps just some young person in the future, that's a good thing.
I think so. I think that's absolutely right. I think that we're also, like, I haven't seen us talk enough about what Suni Lee was able to do last night at time of this taping.
I think that's coming, though, don't you think? I think her story is just at the
yes.
beginning. She's going to be everywhere.
She's going to be everywhere. This is definitely a breakthrough moment. This is also in a whole context of anti-AAPI violence that we've seen in the United States. She's so relatable. And that's one of the things that I think we've seen. What makes Olympians resonate isn't just gold, it's relatability. And, you know, she had a TikTok immediately after she won gold where she just ate a pizza. And that was the first thing that she said in her interview. She was like, well, I won gold, I'm going to eat a pizza. And I get it. I think also, you know, it's really, we can't overstate how important it is to talk about the fact that Simone Biles is putting herself first. I do think that this is a conversation that we've been trying to have for many years. I also think that even without, if you put aside mental health from this conversation, this is a conversation that we've had starting with NFL players retiring very early just to put their own future health, their own futures as a priority, right? And we, like Andrew Luck, we can go down the line. It's a continuation of that idea of the fact that the immediate glory and you're playing sports or you're doing your sport right now isn't the thing that matters to you the most, because you still have 40 or 50 years of the rest of your life to live. And that's not something that we're used to talking about. And that also speaks to, as fans or as media, how much we expect from these athletes and what we think that they owe us. And they don't actually owe us very much.
Yeah, I think for Simone Biles, this is a safety issue first and foremost. And then after that becomes physical health, mental health, the sort of the pressure of athletics and stuff. But she made a choice basically that to me was safety above all. And that if she's not comfortable in the air with how she ultimately may land or perform her movement, she had to think of herself first. It does make me think, Kavitha, that a place like The Athletic, whatever, other publications that care about doing quality work and have investment, I feel like they should have a mental health sports reporter. I just feel like that beat. I'm not saying Simone Biles that her story is only a question of mental health. I think me, Kavitha, and I have sort of said pretty clearly it's not. But I just think that subject matter is so interesting, so important. I think so many people can relate to it, even if you're not a professional athlete. And, you know, we did some of it at Sports Illustrated. My colleagues, David Epstein, Pablo Torre and some others did work on that and frequent work on that for David Epstein, but it never really became a beat. And I've always thought that this would be a pretty interesting beat for a sports place to have.
I mean, I think that you can't go wrong when you have somebody on staff who actually knows how to talk about these issues, right? And I think that in general, we don't have enough people in sports media who represent or who have the vocabulary or the wherewithal to cover either mental health issues, disabled issues, transgender issues, right? So that's like, not to equate those three things, but I think that it could serve media companies to have people who are more equipped to talk about that. I will say, just in the last 3-4 months or so, probably starting with Naomi, I've been asked from global media appearances that I've done much more about mental health than I've ever in the past, and it's just been a concentration of that. So I do think that there needs to be an understanding here, and it can't just come from, you know, an ancillary, we're seeing what's happening here, and let's comment on that. There does need to be more expertise, and it's so hard also. I think that there's so many pitfalls to fall into when you are talking about these kinds of issues, that there needs to be a sensitivity around it that probably does require a separate hiring.
Suni Lee's parents immigrated from Laos, I believe, correct? Mm-hmm. Right? Immigrants, they get the job done once again. all right. So last thing I
don't think I've ever done a podcast with you without a Hamilton reference, I'm also going to say.
I've only seen Hamilton not live.
On Disney Plus?
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I feel like the person who is the massive, like, Hamilton, like, line dropper all the time is Jane McManus. Like, she can't go a conversation without dropping a Hamilton.
I love Jane to death. I believe she saw Hamilton in New York, which I'm extremely jealous of. The only time I've seen Hamilton live was in London on July 4th.
What are you, fancy person? Pretty sweet.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, let's finish up with this. As I'm asking you this question, I'm thinking of the Cole Beasley presser. But how much of a story do you think COVID and the NFL and vaccinations will ultimately be? I feel like, you know, training camp is sort of like where the rubber meets the road. But, you know, I've followed it very interestingly. A lot of the there's been some loud player voices who are who have indicated, at least at this point, they may not get vaccinated. I do wonder if that ultimately changes as we get close to the season. But I just
there have also been a lot of loud non-voices.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. What do you think, though? I mean, like, you know, the league sent out a stat or the other day that I think it's in the high 80s in terms of actual vaccinations right now. So I don't know. Maybe like in 3 months, this isn't a story, but I wonder your impression of it, because so far it's gotten a lot of ink, basically, COVID in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that I actually had more insight into this, because last year when the NFL was just completely treating things as if there wasn't a global pandemic going on, I thought that, not wishing for it, but I thought that things were going to go south. And the NFL pulled off having a full season. They absolutely did. They had the Super Bowl on time. And the NFL is a perpetually oiled machine that can pull that kind of thing off. I wish that more players were getting vaccinated, frankly. It's actually really distressing to see what we're going to continue seeing, which is more players who are coming out and either saying, I don't think it's going to be the Cole Beasleys who are, let's just not give him more airtime. But I do think that, you know, if I were a betting person, I would bet on the NFL getting this done. Getting their players mostly vaccinated. That being said, you know, we've seen in Major League Baseball the 85% threshold being met by teams that are still having some kind of outbreak. And players on those teams, the 15% of those players, or however many percentage that's going to end up being, obfuscating on the question of whether or not they've been vaccinated. I don't know. I think that football in particular is also just such an addiction, especially in the United States, that I don't know. I don't think that people, even people who are pro vaccination, are going to care that much when September comes around about who is vaxxed and who isn't. And that's kind of sad.
That's interesting. I mean, it's something I think a lot of Americans think about all the time. It is amazing to me that this became a political issue. It didn't have to. We could probably do a 5-hour podcast as to
about just that.
Yeah, as to the why. But I think at a fundamental level, Kavitha, I imagine you agree with me on this. I think no matter how an individual may feel about vaccinations and freedom and what it theoretically represents to them, blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, if you have that kind of high-paying job in what is ultimately a private, very hard club to get into, I think I would just be stunned if I'm not – maybe they don't get 100%, but if they don't get like – I will be stunned if they don't get like 99.8, 99.9. I don't think people are going to give up their lucrative financial career for whatever their feelings may be on not taking the vaccine. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. And I think the NFL will ultimately get what it wants. And what the NFL wants, of course, is not to lose any kind of inventory, any kind of game, which will screw up with their broadcast contracts and their stranglehold on the American psyche when it comes to sports. So they are probably not the only
in the best position to have high. Yeah,
I was gonna say they're one of the only leagues. Now, I'm not saying the only league, but they're one of the only leagues in North America where they can really like be a hard line on this and probably win.
I will say that, you know, we've talked about Dak Prescott for the last like 7-8 days now, and I've had people text me and I've had these conversations with people either off the record or on. I don't think anybody believes that Jerry Jones is allowing any of his players to not be vaccinated, whatever they're going to say in the public eye. So I agree with you on that point. I think that also, you know, the messaging, it doesn't necessarily match the reality and definitely doesn't match the economic reality. And especially in a sport like football where you have such short longevity and when your next day is not guaranteed. So yeah, I agree with that. I just wish I wish it didn't take these conversations. I wish that we didn't even have to have this conversation.
Again, I recognize that there's polarization in the United States and there's always going to be certain issues that people disagree on. Just in my whatever knucklehead opinion, this should have never been one, and it's amazing that it became one. And part of the reason that it is one is where we are in certain parts of the country with this. All right, Kavitha, is there anything else Olympics-wise that you want to get to before I let you go? You're an in-demand guest. I see you on television all the time lately, so I don't want to take up too much of your time in case your booking agent is on the other line.
Well, no, thanks. I'm in demand as so far as, you know, the last couple of days goes, but that's, you know, what it is.
Is it the Kavitha Davidson salad days right now when it comes to?
I think it's honestly, it's a couple of days and then you won't see me for another 4 years. So it's fine.
I'm trying to think of, you know, you're like a swimmer, like for American audience, you're like that incredible swimmer.
I'm the media version of the Olympics. Yeah.
You're like that incredible swimmer from like Holland or, you know, Japan, who are like, wow, that person's incredible. And then you don't think about him for the next 4 years.
Yeah. The only thing, and I will bring this up until the day I die, is baseball and softball being back in the Olympic program has been great.
I know, and then Paris and the organizing committee, because of the Europeans don't play,
to have it.
So
yeah.
Frustrating.
Yeah, but we'll probably have it in 2028 when they're in LA. So, but yeah, baseball being back is pretty great. The idea of baseball is not a global sport, just as a continuation of some things that have been said about like Shohei Ohtani not being the face of the sport. I think that the Olympics are a really great showcase for discounting why that's not true.
I would say I'm glad you brought that up, and we'll end on this because you'll have an interesting take on this. Do you think maybe it doesn't happen in our lifetime, maybe it does, but do you think we'll ever get to the point where Major League Baseball decides that Olympic baseball is a massively important branding exercise for them, and they decide to go down the route that the NHL did, where they stop their season and allow their players to play? You know, right now, the Olympics are essentially an afterthought for major leaguers. They don't play. They've never played. But could you, like, how fascinating would it be if, like, the mindset on that changed and you had the best major leaguers playing this, like, two-week Olympic tournament?
I think that we've had this conversation before, and they absolutely, like Major League Baseball absolutely needs to get to the point where they do recognize that the Olympics could be a major showcase for the best baseball players that exist. I think that just generally as well, Major League Baseball knows that they need to globalize, that the sport is global, and embracing that. If we had an NBA equivalent, right, of baseball, if we had superstars that are on this kind of showcase in the way that we do right now for basketball, I think that can only benefit a game that is trying to not only get younger, but also get more diverse and get more fans who aren't currently watching the game. And frankly, in 20 years, the most of the fans who are watching baseball right now are not going to still be with us, and the Olympics and a global showcase like this is a good way to do that. I don't know how that counteracts with the World Baseball Classic, but I think that we also saw last year when none of us had live sports, when none of us had baseball, we were all waking up early to watch the KBO. We were all watching Korean baseball, and obviously baseball is a gigantic game in Japan. So I think that it behooves Major League Baseball to embrace that instead of trying to shun that.
The World Baseball Classic, that initial one, or maybe it was the initial one, the mm-hmm. second one was awesome. Like, I was so into that for a while. I would love to see it. I think it actually would be great for the global branding of the game. I do certainly recognize how many logistics hurdles will have to be jumped in order for MLB to pull that off. Kavitha Davidson is a sports and culture writer for The Athletic, host of the Culture Calculus podcast. You can see her on various news outlets around the world at this point, not even just the United States. And she's always great to come on to this podcast. I pay her $0 for it, so she's totally doing it as a favor to me. But I appreciate it all the same. Kavitha, thanks so much. You'll be back. I always like talking to you, and thanks for joining me on the Sports Media Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Richard.
All right, back in the studio. My thanks to Kavitha for popping on. She's always great. Just really interesting insight into all of this. Terrific writer, so I always appreciate her coming on. Previous podcast prior to this, we had Chad Finn previewing, actually, the Olympics and what we thought viewership might be. And Melanie Newman on her journey calling Major League Baseball games. She works for the Orioles she calls Orioles games, I should say, for Massive Network. Prior to that, Jamel Hill on What's Next for ESPN regarding Maria Taylor, etc. That obviously has sort of played itself out. Jamel predicted Maria Taylor would leave, and she did. She indeed did. And Fabian Ardiaad covering Shohei Ohtani. He now covers the Dodgers for us, but covered the Angels for a long time. And then just go down the archives list, hopefully something you like. Mike Golick, Michael Kay, John Wertheim, Ian Dark, and the list goes on and on. If you like this stuff, please leave us a five-star review and a nice note. That is how this podcast continues. My thanks, of course, to Patrick Antonetti for producing this podcast. Thanks to everybody at Cadence 13 for their support. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon on the Sports Media Podcast.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk.
No.
You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter and he said, oh, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.